I'm sure all of us were very pleased to see that the 96 victims of Hillsborough and the families actually found out the truth through the inquest a few days ago, and are now getting partial justice, but their battle still continues to get full justice in terms of putting South Yorkshire Police to account. And it reminded me whilst I was watching that coverage that Aubrey happened 4 years before that. And you may remember that Arthur himself was arrested at Aubrey. And that we should be supporting now pressure that the Yorkshire Police, the South Yorkshire Police, should sort out what they did to minors at Aubrey. And we should be supporting the Aubrey Truth and Justice campaign to that end. My father was a coal miner, and he was an NUM man and a Scarborough man. So it's with great pleasure, really, that I welcome Arthur to Chesterfield. And also, I think people would acknowledge that Arthur was a terrific leader of the NUM through their heroic struggle against Thatcher. And I think he's probably the most significant socialist figure in the last century or so. So for me, it's a great pleasure to introduce Arthur to Chesterfield, and I think we should give him a great Chesterfield welcome. Arthur Scarborough.
Arthur Scarborough, leader of a red socialist Labour Party, originally founded by the legendary Irish socialist James Connolly. Speaking on the case, a socialist case for leaving the European Union. My speech is going to be moderate, reasonable, and to the point. And if some people take offence, it means that they may well have a different point of view, and it's the point of view rather than what's being said that causes them distress. Listen carefully to what the chairman said. He referred to a Toby Perkins. I've read a bit about him. He says, look what we've got from the European Union. The right to a minimum 28 days paid leave. Was he kidding? We won those things before we even joined the European Union.
In other words, nearly 9 hours a day.
does that fit in with the claim that we've got an advance from the European Union? But the miners had it. And we won the right to an 8 hours day. And we didn't do it with eloquence. We didn't win it because of our case. We certainly didn't win it because the courts listened to our arguments. In fact, they turned us down 4 times. But there was a persuasive effort when 150,000 miners went on strike. And suddenly, we had an 8-hour day before we went into any European Union. Now, I want to dispel the theory, the concept, the belief on some people's part that Britain has always been in the European Union since we voted in a referendum in 1975. The BBC, I think it is here today, have promised to put this out on television tonight for a 3-hour non-stop show, thereby showing how democratic they are. And I understand that the CIA agent who is in here, they're always in, will be reporting back to Washington because they're desperately interested. Britain did not join the European Union as a result of a referendum. We've never joined by the will of the people. What happened in 1975 was that the people in Britain were asked to vote for or against membership of the European Common Market as a result of the Treaty of Rome. There were voices in the Labour movement, certainly not revolutionary voices, who were opposed to Britain going into the European Common Market. You might be surprised to hear some of the names. Bill Gates still. Dennis Healey. Do you know what the argument was? I agree with them. They said if we join the European Common Market, inevitably we will lose the right to rule ourselves and we will be ruled by an unelected body which will become a United States of Europe. They were right, weren't they? Yes. That's exactly what happened. We didn't join the European Union even as a result of a parliamentary vote until 1992. But we never had a vote. And here we are, for the first time, being asked in a referendum whether or not we should come out of something that we never voted to give in. I think we ought to have a look at it, carefully. I'll go back to Dorby Perkins. He said, we've won the right for equal pay. Is he feeling all right? Does he not know that women workers get a third less than male workers in 2016? Some bloody victory. That's the price of Toby in support of staying in the European Union. Listen to this one. This is Toby, not me. The right of equal treatment for part-time and agency workers. He must be living in dreamland. Agency workers, they send for them when they want them. They send them home when they don't want them. They pay them only for the work that they do on the spot. And they call that equal treatment and fair treatment. And they call that an advance. My God, how can anybody be so daft? He then says, we've won the right to be informed and consulted on changes that could affect jobs. Well, ain't that wonderful? The steel workers have the right to be consulted before the sacking. The miners have the right to be consulted before the sackers. What a price we've paid so far for being members of the European Common Market and now members of the European Union. Look at the figures. Coal industry. Prior to the Treaty of Paris, which was the first one that brought in the coal and steel community, we had a whole range of coal mining industries in Europe. You might be surprised at some of the countries. In 1950, we had these countries producing coal and supplying heat and energy for all of their inhabitants. Ireland, Italy, Spain, Belgium, France, the Netherlands, and East and West Germany. Today, every single one of those countries, with the exception of Germany, doesn't have one working coal mine. Under the Treaty of Rome and the European Union, we have to go competitively for the cheapest fuel we can get. And so if a country abroad produces coal and subsidizes it by a government subsidy, and it's cheaper than British coal, then we have to go for that import. Of course, I'm sorry to say this, the Greens have prattled on about the issue of the environment and the emission of CO2. But how many people have ever told you about the power station in Canada called the Boundary Power Station? It's a power station that's fired by coal. It's with new technology and carbon capture, and it's reduced the emission of CO2 by 92%, almost to zero. It also has reduced the emission of all other toxic problems that are associated with anything that you produce. Now we've got no coal industry in Britain, yet we import 44 million tons of coal every year. And we pay out for that billions of pounds. If we still had a coal industry, we would be saving 10 billion pounds, which we have to purchase in imported coal. And if you ask me what we could do with it, we could give free electricity to every pensioner in Britain. Now that's the kind of policy that we want. And it will not, you'll not get any electricity. The steel industry used to produce all the steel we wanted. The best steel in the world. Renowned. There were steel plants all over the United Kingdom. You might recall that some people, including me, warned the steel workers that if they didn't support the miners in 1984, they would face the same fate that the miners would face if the trade union movement didn't support them. But what's happened? Ravenscraig in Scotland refused to support us. And Bill Sears, the General Secretary, said, "I've got to support my members." Right? Look at it. Go and have a look at Ravenscraig. It's a grass field, and 30,000 jobs went. Go to Hartlepool. where Mendelssohn had the architect of support for the common market and for the European Union. The steel industry has been closed. Scunthorpe in Yorkshire has been cut back dramatically. And Orgreave, I know about Orgreave. I had an arresting time there. I also had a clout on the head from a policeman's truncheon. I'll tell the BBC a story. Within 2 minutes of me being knocked unconscious, the assistant chief constable of the South Yorkshire Police Force, Clements, went on television and said, Mr. Scargill slipped on a sleeper, a railway sleeper. I never saw a railway sleeper. There were no photographers there. There were no television cameras there. To be fair to them, the police would not let them come anywhere near. But one lad from a local coal mine happened to have a little camera with him. And I've got the original photograph of the police who weren't carrying short shields, but they were, who weren't carrying truncheons, but they were, who weren't carrying staves, but they were, and we didn't have horses, but they were there, rushing past and hitting me on the back of the head and knocking me to the ground. You can put it on television if you want. How I was knocked unconscious. The brutality that took place at Orgreave was not something that just happened. It wasn't a riot. It was young men and women dressed in plimsolls, t-shirts, no weapons, facing a paramilitary police force. The violence that everybody saw on television should have led to a massive public inquiry. Orgreave is now a centrepiece demanding that a miscarriage of justice be put right. The only way we're going to get to the truth is by identifying who was responsible for the carnage at Orgreave. Well, I'm going to put the blame publicly. They can sue me if they want. Those who were responsible for the carnage at Orgreave were Margaret Thatcher, Leon Britton, the Tory government, and the South Yorkshire Police, and all the other police forces, including members of the military who were in police uniforms. Out of work, 11 million. If you don't believe me, go out into any town or city in Britain and look at the carnage, look at the chaos, look at the food banks. In 2016, we've got food banks having to please hand out a parcel. I never thought in my lifetime I would see the reincarnation of the crash of 1929, or the chaos that we saw or witnessed in the 1930s with unemployment. And yet here we are, facing the worst economic, social and political crisis in living memory. There are issues that today we can't duck, and I'm not prepared to duck them for anybody. I want to make it clear that if we came out of the European Union, we would go back into the world. They asked us, well, who would you trade with? Well, I'm telling you where we ought to be getting our oil from. The largest reserves of oil in the world are in Venezuela. We could trade with them straight away and get cheap oil.
Now, any child will tell you that if you've got a tree
It takes in carbon dioxide and it releases oxygen. So if you chop it down, you destroy the ability to absorb carbon dioxide, CO2. On the other hand, the transportation of these chopped down trees to the power stations at Drax is costing a fortune in terms of pollution, because it's been taken back by a lorry burning diesel or petrol, producing CO2. And by the time it gets there, you've got CO2 coming out of the chimney again. We are victims of international capitalism. And we ought to understand how the European Union came into existence. Because we can have all the facts in the world, but we also need to understand the politics. Do you know who first proposed it? Harry S. Truman, the President of the United States of America. He's just ringing. And every single president since. That's the reason Obama came to Britain. Because he wants to keep the European Union, because they regard it as the 51st state of the United States. That's why they want to keep. Now, you've heard some excellent speeches about this trade international agreement, keep it, right? But look at it and understand it. What it means is the free flow of goods and services, the free flow of labour without any restraint whatsoever. It's utter chaos. And I'll tell you this, I am going to deal with an issue that many politicians duck or weave away from. Immigration or migration. You can't have a discussion about the European Union without looking at this issue. When Britain joined the European Union in 1992, under the Maastricht Agreement, it provided two fundamental issues. The freedom of people from all the European states to move freely into any other country that they wanted within the European Union. But secondly, it also provided for the free movement of capital, of industries. Take, for example, Dyson. He certainly swept clean, didn't he? He sacked his workforce in Britain and took his vacuum cleaners to be produced cheaply in the East Asia. Is that a fair competition? What they're doing, of course, is creating a situation where they can drive wages down, drive living standards down, increase working hours. How long are we going to stand for it? I'll tell you what the problem is. Before we joined the European Union, and I keep saying it, in 1992, the birth rate in Britain was 1.8%. That meant we had a declining population, as indeed a lot of countries in Western Europe did. It was predicted that our population would go down to 60 million. And in 20 years' time, it would go down to 55 million. Today, it's virtually 70 million. Now, they haven't suddenly appeared from Mars. And they're not immigrants. And they are not some species we've never heard of. I'll give you the figures, not their figures, our figures, which we know to be true. First of all, the Socialist Labour Party and Arthur Scargill will welcome as genuine immigrants and asylum seekers and give them refuge and succour It's our policy as socialists to do that. But on the other hand, we have a right to say we are not prepared to accept the free flow of migrant labour to just walk into our country when we've already got 11 million people unemployed. It doesn't make economic or social or political sense. Last year, I'll tell you the figures. There were two inland figures, 250,000 immigrants and asylum seekers came into Britain. Yes? Do you know how many people emigrated to other countries to live? 350,000. Now, my maths aren't very good, but that suggests to me that more people left than came in. So where the hell did the others come from? The answer is, it's migrant labour coming in because it can be hired by gangmasters cheaply. Not their fault, they haven't got a job. But it is the fault of membership of the European Union that we can't control who comes in and who doesn't come in. The miners' union, 50, 60 years ago, understood the principle. When under the Treaty of Paris, they wanted to close down the Italian coal mines and send the sacked coal miners to work in Britain. And our policy said, my forebears not being, they're not coming. For two reasons. One, they've got a right and a responsibility to work their own coal in Italy. Their own jobs should be preserved in Italy. And secondly, if they come into Britain, it will displace people's jobs and the children and grandchildren of our people will be affected. It's brilliantly simple. If we had not been in the European Union, we wouldn't be facing the kind of crisis we've got now in the National Health Service. You can't plan a budget for 60 million people and then suddenly be faced with 70 million without the economic consequence. The only problem is they don't pay who are in charge. It's ordinary men and women who are at work who have to pay. And that's what's wrong with our nation. We have to have a policy that makes sense. So where did the other people come from? 525,000 people came into Britain last year from the European Union countries. They weren't immigrants, they're migrant labour. And it's a policy which we've got to tackle. You can't say you have unrestricted access. What happens if 200 million decide to come into Britain? It's a bloody well sick.
The world will be empty, we can go and live there.
They don't want to, though.
What did he say? The answer to the problem is simple. You have to have control over your own political decisions. You have to have control over the economics that matter. Reference has been made to the junior doctors, and I support them 100%. I went on the picket line with them. I'm a bit older now, and I've lost one or two of the hairs. And this young woman doctor, she said to me, she didn't know what it was, she said, do you know, she says, it's my first strike, and it's my first picket line. I said, mine too. And I stood there with them as people were going past giving total support. And what are the politicians doing? We've got this spokesperson for the Labour Party saying to the health minister, no, I shall not be on the picket line. I shall be doing my best down here to negotiate a settlement. I'll tell you what Jeremy Corbyn should have been saying, shall I? He should have been saying, every Labour Member of Parliament will leave this chamber and go on a picket line supporting the junior doctors in their struggle for fairness and justice. The TUC General Secretary should not be waffling on about the pros and cons here and there. There should be a statement from the General Counsel of the TUC that says all workers should come out on strike in support of the junior doctors and give solidarity to the United. I'm not saying that lightly, and I'm not saying something I wouldn't do. In 1982, the miners in Britain and here in Derbyshire, you came out on strike in support of the health workers. That's why they won the dispute. And the way to win the dispute this time is to give them support. They give you support when you're ill. Give them the support from the healthy in order to save an ailing and failing National Health Service. How would I do it? One of the first things when we get back to normality is to ban all private medicine and say this, that if there's a person in this nation in need of care and medical attention, irrespective of their standing or their wealth, they should be entitled to it at the time of need, upon demand, and free of charge. Simple as that. No if, no but. The principle that was put forward in the health service program in 1948. I believe that most people would agree with that, unless you're a multi-billionaire who wants private health care just for them, like they have even still now in the United States of America. Where do we go from here? I'll go back to Toby Perkins. Toby Perkins says, we've got wonderful, wonderful things from being members of the European Union. He says, Britain's membership of the EU makes it more competitive and makes the British system fairer. Our continued membership provides 3 million jobs. This is Toby, not me. Just imagine a system like that. We've heard the arguments from some trade union leaders that we get our rights from the European Union. Who are they kidding? Have they not read about the Tolkienal Martyrs and the Chartists who struggle one trade union recognition and the rights of workers in Britain long before there was a European Union? Have they forgotten, or don't they know, that the suffragettes won the right to vote without permission from Europe because they were prepared to struggle? And that's what matters. It's workers when they go and demand that which is right, that struggle becomes a reality. People often say to me, and it's been said on this platform with the best will in the world, that they defeated the miners. No, they didn't. The failure of the 3UC and the Labour Party under Kinnock and their inability to give that support were responsible for us not winning all of that struggle. But I'll tell you the greatest victory of all, shall I? It was the struggle itself that was the greatest victory. Don't forget what happened in Cuba. 15 years before the Cuban Revolution in 59, a revolution was crushed. But they celebrate even today. Because without that struggle, the 1959 revolution that gave them socialism wouldn't and couldn't have taken place. So understand, it's an ongoing struggle. It's what makes me a socialist. It's what makes me a trade unionist. It's what makes me an internationalist. I'm in support of internationalism, but real internationalism. An internationalism that makes brothers and sisters, irrespective of colour, creed, religion, or even faith, exactly the same. And it's high time in education we stopped with faith schools teaching people that that religion's wrong and this religion's right. If people can go to university, if they're a Muslim, a Jew, a Hindu, a Protestant, a Catholic, and they can all be educated together, then our children at 4 and 5 ought to go to the same schools and have the same education and love each other rather than breed contempt and hatred and savagery. Some people might think that our demands are too militant. I don't believe it. The benefits we've lost are there for all to be seen. Tell you one more thing that we were able to win without the EU. I don't know how many people in this room remember it firsthand or have read about it. The Pentonville Fire. The dockers they put in prison for daring to strike against the anti-trade union legislation. I remember speaking with one of the Pentonville Five, Vic Turner. And he told the story of what happened. They were put in jail. They'd been through all the courts, and predictably every court had turned them down. No chance. He said, and one morning, they were ordered to go to the warden's office. And we went, he said. I thought, what have we done wrong now? Are they going to transfer us to Dartmoor? He said, we went into the office. He said, there was a funny looking man there with knee breeches. He says, a roof round his neck, a funny hat, and a staff. He said, and the warden said, this is the official solicitor. So Vic said, we've got a solicitor. No, he said, you don't understand. This is the official solicitor. And he got this staff and he went, I come upon you this day in the name of Her Majesty Elizabeth II, in this the year of her reign, and I declare henceforth each and every one of you are the OI free to go. What's that mean? Warden says you can go. You're free. He said, well, can I just ask you a question? He said, yes. He said, can we hire you as our solicitor? He said, no, sir. He said, can I ask you, how long have you been in this job? He said, do you mean me, sir, or my predecessors? Well, I said, both. He said, well, my predecessors from 1560. Me, for nearly 30 years. He says, and how many times have you done this? So this is the first. And Vic says, do you know what convinced him? It wasn't the courts that suddenly discovered a piece of evidence. It was the 2 million people out on strike, walking around London and every county to see there was 2 million workers stopped work. That convinced them what they had to do. It's a tragedy they didn't do the same of the Shrewsbury too. with Warren and Ricky Tomlinson, who were kept in prison on false charges, and they still haven't had an apology. But it's a demonstration that if workers are prepared to take action, then they can win all their advances. If we remain in the European Union, trade union rights will be swept away. They nearly have been already. We've got the weakest trade union leadership that we've ever seen. If the trade union leaderships of today will put forward the policies of yesteryear, in the 70s, and I'd love to go back to them, we would now be campaigning, as Tony Benn and I campaigned in 1975, for a no vote or a yes vote, whichever the case may be. In this case, we would be campaigning for a no vote. And I'll tell you where I stand as far as Jeremy Corbyn is concerned. A friend of mine for over 25 years, I expected, like many others, that even though it was a Social Democratic Party, with the election of Corbyn on a socialist programme, we would see the scrapping of Trident missiles, and we would see, above all, Britain come out of the European Union. I was disillusioned, to say the least, with the decision that maybe we could have the nuclear submarines, but no missiles in them. It's a compromise and a sop to those who don't agree with him in Parliament. If they don't agree with him, they should recognise that they disagree with the 60% of the membership that voted him in. And what Jeremy Corbyn should have done is to have come out and said, I am calling for a no vote and get out of Europe as quick as we possibly can. And even if there was only 20 of them, it doesn't matter. The mass of the party would have followed him. And the movement would have followed him. For me, that represents the ultimate betrayal. 2 weeks ago, there was a mass demonstration in Dublin to commemorate the rising in 1916. Those brave men and women were prepared to give their very lives in the fight for independence and in the fight for a sovereign right, a say over their own lives. As I speak to you today, I want to echo James Connolly's famous words. Our demand is moderate. We only want the earth, and by that I mean the earth we inherit on this island, and the right to determine our policies and not be dictated to by unelected bureaucrats in Brussels. Time is now. Vote no on the 23rd of June.